Have you ever sat at the end of a runway, looked at the trees past the departure end, and thought, "This does not feel right"? I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern Radio Hangar, and today we are going to walk through a scenario that has bent more airplanes and broken more egos than almost any other trap in general aviation. The hot day departure from a high elevation airport when density altitude turns your airplane into something you barely recognize. This one is personal for me because I watched a student almost learn it the hard way. Shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, let me set the scene. You are a private pilot with about 120 hours. You planned a summer trip to visit a friend in Colorado. You're flying a Cherokee 184 seats, 180 horsepower Lycoming, and you have been flying out of an airport near sea level your entire life. You have your passenger, a couple of bags, and full fuel. The airplane is not at max gross, but it is close. Maybe 50 pounds under you flew in yesterday evening. The air was cool, the density altitude was reasonable, and the landing was fine. Today you are leaving after lunch. The field elevation is 7,100 feet. The temperature on the ATIS is 32 degrees Celsius. That is about 90 Fahrenheit. Here is your first decision point, and most pilots blow right past it. You pull out your phone or your E6B and you compute the density altitude. It comes back at 9,800 feet. 9,800 feet. Let that sink in. Your airplane thinks it is sitting on a runway at nearly 10,000 feet above sea level, and you have never in your life operated this airplane above 4,000 feet density altitude. Now, here is what I wish someone had told me when I was training. Calculating the number is not the same as understanding the number. Every student learns the formula: pressure altitude plus the temperature deviation. You can punch it into for flight in about 3 seconds. But knowing that the density altitude is 9,800, and actually understanding what that means for your takeoff roll, your climb rate, and your options if something goes wrong, those are completely different things. Let's walk through this together. You pull out the pilot's operating handbook, the performance charts for the Cherokee 180, you look at the takeoff distance chart, and this is where it gets uncomfortable. At 9,800 feet density altitude and your current weight, the chart says you need about 2,200 feet of ground roll to get airborne. The total distance to clear a 50-foot obstacle is somewhere north of 3,800 feet. The runway you're sitting on is 5,000 feet long, so on paper you have margin, right? This is exactly where the scenario starts to test your decision-making, because here's what the performance chart does not tell you. That number assumes a hard, dry, level runway in perfect condition. It assumes you execute the takeoff exactly the way the test pilot did when Piper certified those numbers. It assumes no wind, or in some charts, a slight headwind. And it assumes the engine is producing full rated power, which it was when the airplane was new, not after 2,000 hours on the engine and a last overhaul 900 hours ago. The real world gives you a runway with patches and a slight upslope in the last third. There is a quartering tailwind at 5 knots that the ATIS mentioned almost as an afterthought. And your engine? It is making power, but probably not book power. The FAA's airplane flying handbook talks about this. They call it the myth of the performance chart. The numbers in the POH are best case numbers. In the real world, you should add at least 50% to the published takeoff distance. Some experienced mountain pilots add even more. So now your 2,200 feet of ground roll becomes 3,300 feet or more, and the 50-foot obstacle clearance distance, you're looking at something closer to 5,000 feet on a 5,000-foot runway. That is not margin. That is a bet. Here is the next piece of the puzzle, and this is the one that actually scares me. Even if you do get airborne before the end of the runway, your climb rate at 9,800 feet density altitude in a Cherokee 180 near gross weight is going to be miserable. The book says maybe 300 feet per minute at best. In reality, you might see 150, maybe 200 on a good day. So you're off the ground, barely climbing, and there are trees and terrain ahead, and your airplane is wallowing. It does not feel like the airplane, you know. The controls are mushy because the air is thin. The engine sounds different because it is producing less power. Everything about this departure is wrong, and you're just now figuring that out at 50 feet above the ground with terrain rising ahead of you. This is the moment when accidents happen. The National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB, has investigated hundreds of these. The scenario is almost always the same: pilot with low to moderate experience, high density altitude, airplane at or near gross weight, hot afternoon, short runway or obstacles off the departure end. and the pilot made the decision to go. So, let's rewind. You're back on the ramp and you have not started the engine yet. This is where good decision-making actually lives, not in the air, on the ground. You have four tools available to you right now, and together they form a decision framework that will keep you out of trouble at any high-elevation airport. Tool number one, the performance charts. You already ran these, but this time, add 50% to every number. If the book says 2,200 feet of ground roll, plan for 3,300. If the obstacle clearance distance is 3,800 feet, plan for 5,700. Does the runway still work? If the answer is no, or even maybe you have your answer, you're not going right now. Tool number two, weight. This is the variable you can actually control. You looked at your weight and you are 50 pounds under gross, but what if you took off with half fuel instead of full tanks? At 6 pounds per gallon, dumping 20 gallons saves you 120 pounds. That changes everything. Your takeoff roll drops, your climb rate improves. You can fuel up at a lower elevation airport an hour into the flight. This is not cutting corners, this is smart planning. The examiner on a check ride would love to hear you explain that decision. Tool number three. Timing. The temperature right now is 32 degrees Celsius. What will it be at 6 in the morning tomorrow? Probably 12 or 15 degrees. That alone drops your density altitude by more than 1,000 feet. It might drop it by 1,500. Your takeoff roll shrinks. Your climb rate improves dramatically. The airplane feels like your airplane again. The old mountain flying saying exists for a reason. Fly early, fly cool. Tool number four, the wind right now. You have a quartering tailwind. That is the worst possible situation, but mountain winds often shift in the morning. Check the forecast. If there will be a headwind component early tomorrow, that is another reason to wait. Now here is the decision point, and this is what the airman certification standards are really looking for when they talk about aeronautical decision making. The ACS does not just want you to calculate density altitude, it wants you to demonstrate that you can recognize a high-risk situation and make a conservative choice. That means the correct answer is sometimes, we are not leaving right now. That is incredibly hard to do. You have a passenger sitting next to you who took time off work to make this trip. You told your friend you would be there by tonight. You already paid for the hotel. Every incentive in the world is pushing you toward the runway. This is what the FAA calls the hazardous attitude of resignation blended with pressure. You feel like you have to go, but you do not have to go. You never have to go. That is what Part 91.3 gives you. You are the pilot in command. You are the final authority, and right now the final authority needs to say, we are getting up early tomorrow and leaving at 6 a.m. when the density altitude is 7,000 feet less. Let me give you the version of this story that ends well. You tell your passenger, hey, the air up here is thin and hot. If we leave now, the airplane is going to struggle. I want to get up early and leave at sunrise when conditions are better. It is the safe call. Your passenger might grumble for 5 seconds, but I promise you they would rather hear that on the ground than feel that airplane mushing through the air at 50 feet with trees ahead. You set an alarm. You're at the airport at 5:30. The temperature is 11 degrees Celsius. You compute the density altitude, 8,100 feet. Still high by your home airport standards, but manageable. Your takeoff roll is 1,000 feet shorter than it would have been yesterday afternoon. Your climb rate is double. You lift off. The airplane climbs with authority, and you are on your way home. That is what good scenario-based decision-making looks like. It is not dramatic. Nobody writes articles about the pilot who waited until morning, but the NTSB writes reports about the pilots who did not. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The best decision you will ever make as a pilot is the one nobody notices. Nobody claps when you cancel a flight. Nobody buys you dinner because you waited for better conditions, but you get to keep flying, and the people who depend on you get to keep having you around. One more thing before I let you go. If you're planning any summertime flying to airports above 5,000 feet elevation, brief yourself on the Koch chart. It is a simple graph that shows you how temperature and altitude combine to increase your takeoff distance. It is one page. Print it out and keep it in your flight bag. When you see that your takeoff distance has doubled or tripled compared to what you are used to at home, it changes the way you think about that afternoon departure. Fly smart, fly early, and fly cool. That is the mountain pilot's way, and it works for everyone. Sources for today include the FAA's Airplane Flying Handbook, the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, and the NTSB Accident Database, which has more of these stories than any of us want to read. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. See you next time.